I was just starting in the hospitals. So in third year, you like leave the books behind and you start actually doing, or so they say. I don't know how true that actually is. And I was on internal medicine in my first clerkship, and I had a patient who was having a triple bypass with a valve repair, which is one of the most complicated surgeries that someone can have. And my attending let me go see the surgery, and I was really excited because I'd never seen a surgery before, and I was going to get to stand at the head with anesthesia, and that's a really good view for a cardiothoracic surgery because there's not a lot of room around the bedside. You can't like peer over the shoulder of the surgeon. So I was went down, and I was like, watching and being like totally amazed by what modern science can do, which is interesting to think about because cardiothoracic surgery is not that modern. We've been opening up people's chest cavities for a long time, but the concept of it's just so visceral, and we have so much connotation around the heart. What I'm talking about is not the surgery, but actually the anesthesiologist. So this guy, I was really nervous because ORs are their own cultural beast, and I had heard a lot about being in the OR and what that can mean and how low a student ranks on that pecking order. So I was really trying to be conscientious of my physical space and the way that I was acting with people. And this surgeon was, or the anesthesiologist rather, the surgeon was a classic cardiothoracic surgeon. I think he said two words to me as I like kowtowed away, like, "Oh, sir, I'm so sorry. I'm trembling at your feet." And he liked that, I think. But so this anesthesiologist was a nice guy, I thought, and he made all these great jokes with me. And I knew the patient really well, so when he came in under anesthesia, we made like all these jokes together, and it was really nice. And I left feeling like this was a really positive experience because this anesthesiologist was so friendly to me. There were a couple moments where this anesthesiologist, would grab the back of my arm when it was like at a 90-degree angle. Not grab, that's not a good way, just sort of like hold it, which I think is of an era before my own, when men would hold a woman's arm as she was going into a room or as they were walking together in that kind of like, I don't know, caretaker kind of paternalistic way. And other men of a similar age have done that to me. Ironically, patients who are being seen by cardiothoracic surgeons, these sort of like older man about town kind of guys. So anyway, this anesthesiologist had done that, and then he, at one point during the surgery, because it's a 9 to 10 hour surgery, and we had developed this good rapport, he sort of whispered to me, "If I was your age, I would have been all over you." And I, brand new to both the medical world and also this world where younger and older people have professional relationships, and also men and women have professional relationships, and not everyone is my teacher or my friend. Really just thought like, "Oh, this is normal." Like, "Oh yeah, like that's this guy just like being a chummy guy, and he really thinks I'm a good person, and this is great. So this is going to be a nice surgery, and I'm glad I met this anesthesiologist," is how I took it. And so we like nothing more ever happened that day, and so I left that surgery, finished internal medicine, I did like another 2 months somewhere else, didn't see this anesthesiologist for a little bit, and then I started my surgical rotation, and I would see this guy in surgeries, and in the hallways in down the surgical wing, and whenever we'd see each other, we would sort of make jokes, and he's very sarcastic in a similar way to me, and it felt like very friendly and good. And then one time I was up in the surgical ICU, and I was studying, which seems really like the wrong thing to do, but actually, ICUs, as sad and desperate places as they are very quiet, and because of how sad and desperate, not a lot of people are walking around in the halls, and there's lots of desk space. And there's chairs, which is a premium for a medical student in a hospital because you can't ever sit down. So I was studying in the surgical ICU at one of these like nursing stations, and he happens to walk by, and he sort of says to me, oh, hey, you want to go see this trach? And I was like, what? Yeah, that'd be great. Like, I'd never seen a tracheostomy before, and they're really specialized because mainly ENTs do them, and ENTs are also very specialized, similar to cardiac thoracic surgeons. So we went to go do this tracheostomy with this great kind of wacky older ENT, and it was really interesting and fun. And for me and the patient, it was like also like a very interesting patient to observe and be a part of his care. He was clearly in a lot of emotional pain from having an intubation, and having a tracheostomy was his choice. Like, he really wanted this so he could mouth and be able to use his face and communicate with his family members at this, like, critical end stage of his life. So it was, like, such a wonderful thing to be a part of. And then we finished the tracheostomy, and I was outside, like, you know, getting back to my things, and this same anesthesiologist, you know, and this whole time he'd always be doing things like, you know, in the same way, grabbing the back of my arm or holding it and, you know, saying things like, oh, you're so cute, or, you know, you're so pretty. Do you know how pretty you are? And that's when I started to feel like, okay, this is weird. This is a really weird thing. I don't understand this anymore. And it's getting kind of excessive. And I think the most recent time I saw this guy, I was in the surgical physician's lounge getting a cup of coffee, and he walked in, and the only other person in the room walked out, and he got very close to me, and again, touched the back of my arm, and whispered to me about how great I am, and all these things. And then someone else walked in, and that was, I think, the only time I actually felt, like, really uncomfortable by this person. So, you know, these are sort of a series of experiences. And I talked to my boyfriend about it, and I talked to a couple friends about it, and the responses I'll get are, you know, really run the gamut, whether or not you take it to a higher power or call that sexual harassment is up to you, because to that guy, in his world, what he's doing is not wrong, or if he knows that it's wrong, maybe he doesn't understand how wrong, and to, like, take on that battle, like, with, at this stage in your life is, you know, you should be studying, you should be focused on your career. Is this the, because when we have such little time, do you want to be spending time on that emotionally and, like, practically, do you want to be spending time on that? And that's fair, because I don't really feel damaged by this person. It's almost embarrassing for me, because I feel like I didn't stand up for myself somehow. I've never spoken to this person about it, because we also see each other so infrequently. You know, I'm not in the OR again. I finished my surgical rotations. I won't ever. And he's not a faculty member. That's the other thing. He's a private anesthesiologist who's only contracted for very technical anesthesia cases. So I would only see him if I went into another cardiothoracic, you know, these extreme trachs and cardiothoracic surgeries. Yeah, I never spoke to him. So, but it's something I think about, because at this point, you know, I'm a younger physician in training, and these kinds of moral questions I don't think will stop, and the way that men treat women and that women respond either positively or negatively reinforcing will also be a question I have to answer to myself, you know? The dean of my school, the assistant dean, recently said something that he probably wouldn't like to know being used in this way, but he said that, and he wasn't talking to me specifically, it was like at a student summit or something, he said, familiarity and rapport are the guardian angels of the medical student. And it's true. If you have a good relationship with the people that you're working with as a medical student, and no matter where you go, it makes such a difference. I would never have seen that tracheostomy if he didn't know me and if he didn't like me. And it was a meaningful part of my medical education. There's also this whole element of power that people don't really talk about, like feminine, old school feminine power, when we couldn't talk about things. Like, this is how you would have exerted yourself sexually, in a sense. And so then it's a question to you, do you want to keep engaging in that type of power with a person who only understands, who may only understand feminine power in that way, you know, like, or do you try and, you know, bring that conversation with the person into a different light? So I never tried with him because, it, you know, why? I wouldn't really see him again. But I think if I work with someone who's like that for a long time, I would probably try and, I don't know, do some sort of behavioral conditioning in my own way and, like, try and get that person to understand how that's wrong. But, I mean, I did feel powerful. He thought I was beautiful and funny. And I didn't mind, as so long as I could see things that I wanted to.
Inside Stories is an oral narratives project that catalogs the stories of medical students during their journeys through medical school. The podcast is hosted on In Training, the online magazine for medical students. Visit us at in-training.org/inside-stories. Inside Stories is a founding member of Vocalis, the podcast network for medical students. Please listen to our partner podcasts at vocalisnetwork.wix.com/listen.